Start. This is our first January 2016 Spreecast for the year, and we're going to focus on how to avoid million-dollar legal mistakes. And I want to talk about two different categories. The first category, which I think is the most important, is for employees, for people who are joining startups, because I'm seeing a lot of that in the news where people are saying good technologies is a great example. The employees there feel like they got hoodwinked because they didn't understand how the stock options work. So we're going to talk about that first. Giving out stock options, whether you're the person giving them or receiving them, you have to understand all the timing and all the taxation. And then next, we're going to talk about if you are the founder, if you're the person who has control of that cap table. So let's go ahead and jump right in. So the first thing I want to talk about is you are joining a startup and you get your little offer letter that tells you what your salary is and all the perks. The one area where I see entrepreneurs kind of get messed up or early employees get messed up is that you are so used to joining a company. Let's say you join Microsoft, they give you your offer letter, they give you your package, they tell you what your 401k perks are, they explain to you, you probably go to a lunch with Morgan Stanley or some representative from Fidelity comes in and explains, okay, this is your 401k, here are all the rules and all the taxation around this. You put money into it. If you pull it out, there's a tax on that, so on and so forth. General classical portfolio management theory, and that's been out there for many decades. So you might sit down with somebody from Fidelity who explains, okay, if you're a very young person, you can handle more risks. So maybe you're going to go into a equity mutual fund that has technology companies in it. Now, if you have less risk or less appetite for risk, and even if you're perhaps an older person, maybe you want to go into something more conservative, like a blue chip fund. That's going to be like in Pepsi, Coca-Cola, those types of stocks, and so on and so forth. So as maybe you might even be an older person in the 50s or 60s who says, I don't really want to be in the market for long periods of time. I'm going to go into a bond fund. And a bond fund is basically, you know, you're getting an interest payment. So it's pretty steady, but you're not going to grow. And then last but not least, and hopefully nobody does this, going into a money market fund. So you go into a money market fund just to kind of put your money there to start, and then you should start deciding when you're going to invest. You can invest in different mutual funds, and they give you all of these options. So that is where I think the breakdown is. So if you are so used to going to a corporation where they explain, this is the 401k, this is the IRA, this is the timing, this is the taxation, these are all the mutual funds that you should get into. You want to go with this portfolio, this mutual fund if you have high risk, this one if you have low risk, right? So that does not happen at a startup. If you join the startup with, you know, 3 or 4 or 5, even 10 people, they probably don't have an HR department who's going to explain to you, these are your stock options, this is your vesting, which is your timing, and this is your taxation. If you exercise the stock option, you have a taxable event. So that is really the breakdown. That's what we're seeing right now with all these people complaining that I joined a startup, they gave me these stock options, I read somewhere that I was supposed to exercise them, so I exercised them, and then the company didn't do well, and now I have this taxable event on stock that's worth nothing. Okay, so first and foremost, I want to say I'm not an attorney, and this is not legal advice. This is just generic, you know, what you can do. So your next steps, hopefully after listening to this, is that if you work in a startup, you are going to go to, maybe it's your co-founder, maybe it's your office manager, whoever you report to about administrative issues, whoever gave you your offer letter. And you can say to them, I want to understand more about taxing and actually timing and taxation. So timing is going to be your vesting, how this is vested, and taxation is going to be when does a taxable event occur? Okay, so whoever, you know, is in charge of the admin side of the back office of your company knows how to get in touch with a law firm that set you up. So law firms are great resources. And if you're a client, they generally will just give this to you for free. So what you want to do is you want to learn how to advocate for yourself. So if you're in a startup, you're an entrepreneurial person, you have to learn how to go out and you know, find this information for yourself, advocate for yourself. You're no longer at, you know, Microsoft or some giant company where someone's going to do this for you. So hopefully on Monday morning, you'll go in there and you'll say, hey, look, I don't really understand my stock options that you gave me. I want to understand the timing. How are these vested? Because perhaps you have 4% of the company and it invests, you know, 1% every year. So you need to understand that. You don't really get it until your vesting occurs. So you can actually exercise it, but it's not going to be common share. It's going to be called, it's called restricted share. So those are not really yours yet. They're restricted. So you want to understand that that timing issue is how do you vest, okay? And that's going to help you understand how long you want to be at this company. And the next thing is the taxation piece of it. You want to ask your HR person, whoever is the person in charge, when will I have a taxable event? Now, again, this is not tax advice or legal advice, but I will say this, that each person is different. Each person's tax situation is different. You may be somebody who's here on a visa, you maybe have different taxation. So always ask the law firm if there's a tax attorney there who can explain that to you. And the one thing I keep hearing over and over, every time this comes up in the news, people say, well, I think somebody should teach people this. And I have to say that through tax, through legal firms and tax advisors and wealth advisors, people are teaching this. So I always say this, everything you need to know is already out there. You just have to do the work. So, you know, Morgan Stanley is a good example of a wealth advisor who puts out tons of free information on, you know, what to do with your stock options. There's tons of law firms, Wilson Sonsini. I know all of you are not in Silicon Valley or San Francisco. So wherever you are, there's a big law firm that already has all this information done. They're probably giving free workshops to their clients. So you have to advocate for yourself and ask your HR person, your office manager, whoever it is, that you want to understand about timing and taxation. So the common things that happen is people don't understand their vesting. They think, oh, I got these stock options on mine today, and they quit and they don't realize, no, you don't get those until you fulfill your vesting schedule. Another thing we see is that people just exercise and they don't realize that, okay, this company probably didn't have really good prospects, so I exercised, had a taxable event, and now I'm not even going to get the benefits because I'm paying taxes on something that's worth nothing. And then there's lots of paperwork that you have to fill out. So even if you do it right, 83B election is a good example. If you do everything right, but then you don't file the right paperwork, then it's going to screw you up. So again, it's all about your timing and your taxation. So hopefully, if you're getting stock options, that's awesome, that's great. But you have to be really, really careful, and you have to go out there and figure out, you know, what your next step should be. So that is the first block, and that is really if you are joining a startup. And of course, if you're forming a startup, you'll have all this ready for your employees, so don't get mad at you. The second piece is if you are the founder, okay? And I know we've talked about this a little bit in the past about a common occurrence that I see is somebody gets a company started, they have stock, right? They start to view this stock as just something they can throw around. So I always advocate that you guys should always look, get a cap table. There's a free one down below that you can download and look at it yourself. There's a YouTube video that explains it. And what I see entrepreneurs do over and over again is that they get their stock and they think, okay, this is now our currency. We have no money to pay salaries, but we can give, you know, tons and tons of equity away. So we're seeing people do things like, okay, we have a CEO and a CTO, and let's just make it easy, you know, 50% either way. And then they say, we need somebody to create, you know, a website, we need logos, we need PR, we need this, we need that. So those are things that are a one-time event. So they actually do add value, but you also have to look at the duration. So if you're giving your CTO 50%, well, yeah, the CTO is adding value. He's creating the platform, or she's creating the platform. And there's also duration. He or she's going to be there for a very long period of time. If someone is just putting together your website, just creating your branding, just creating your logo, they are creating value, but is there duration? No. They're going to come in, do work for 3 months, and leave. So you don't want to start giving away, you know, 1%, 2%, 3%. I've seen people give away 5, even 10% to somebody who is, you know, doing some project that just takes a short period of time. So when you give away equity to people, you know, put it in a cap table, just, you know, really basic, simple cap table. Don't even have to, you know, get your attorney involved. Just start looking at a basic spreadsheet. If you start giving everyone 5%, everyone who does something for your company, after a while, that becomes 20%. So what does 20% do to you? When you start to take a round, your Series A is going to be 25%. Your Series B is going to be 25%. And then before you know it, your company's gone. So don't make that mistake of thinking that equity is just this endless currency and you just start giving it away to everybody. You only want to give equity away to people who have are adding value and they have duration. They're going to be there for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. That's the biggest mistake I see people make. So again, the cap table is down there. If you want to check out that cap table, you can download it. There's a YouTube video where I explain cell by cell in very boring monotone. So those people who English is not your first language, you can understand what I'm saying. And you know, don't make that mistake. Really understand that your equity that you have, you know, is a finite amount. It's not like you can just keep giving it away to everybody. And then another piece of this, another layer of this, is our term sheet. So if you are starting a company and you don't understand your term sheet, I'm going to strangle you, because again, all of this information is free and out there. The free course that we have, 3 Steps to Raising Capital Fast, has a bunch of term sheets in there. You can read about term sheets, convertible notes, safes, which is, for most of you, you're probably going to be doing a convertible note or a safe, right? Because if you're just getting going, your valuation is relatively low. So you don't want to do a priced round. A priced round is when you're actually doing, our valuation is X and you're going to get X percent of our company. A convertible note or a safe is going to be where you basically say, okay, give us $500,000, and then, you know, when we do our Series A, our priced round, you're going to convert at a discount, or if it's a valuation cap, it's going to convert based on the valuation cap. So please, please, please read the term sheets. You can even Google right now term sheets and just see tons of term sheets. Start to understand things like a liquidation preference, what are the rights, and understand that when you get a term sheet, you should know, I would say 80% of it. I always say you have to have an attorney signing off on any term sheet. Hopefully, if you're getting stock options, you're getting an attorney to look at that as well. But you have to have an attorney sign off on your term sheet. But that does not stop you from, right now, after this is over, Googling term sheets or going into the free course and checking out term sheets. Look at 10 term sheets, and about 80% of it is the same, right? There's just standard, basic things that we've all come to accept as industry standards. So, that's another piece of how entrepreneurs make million-dollar mistakes, is they say, okay, I'm just going to hire an attorney, and he or she is going to tell me exactly what I need in my terms, and I'm just going to sign off on whatever they sign off on. You should have some kind of working knowledge of what the terms are, so you understand if someone's saying, yeah, we have a liquidation preference of 5 times, that, oh, okay, wait a second, I know for a fact that that standard is 1 times, so, and I've seen it, you know, over and over and over again, so I have enough confidence to say, you know, to your attorney, I think we should push back on that. So remember, when you get a term sheet, don't be so excited that, you know, great, I'm just going to sign this, and whatever they want, they can have. You have the option of pushing back. And hopefully, if you have a term sheet, you have several term sheets. So hopefully you have several term sheets, and you can say, okay, here's 3 or 5 term sheets that we have, and here are the best terms. It's not always about your valuation, and especially if you have a convertible note, it's not going to be about valuation at all. But it's not even about your valuation cap. You want to look at your terms, because you can have an excellent valuation, great valuation cap, but the terms are so horrible that you know, end up losing all your money. We talked about that last month with Square, with the ratchet that they had, and that was part of the term sheet. So again, everything that you need to know about what I'm talking about right now is free and available for you. So we first talked about you're joining a startup, you're getting stock options, you're kind of confused. Go to your office manager, go to your whoever you report to, and say, I want to understand my timing and my taxation. When do I vest? When do I have a taxable event? And there's another layer of this that might be a little bit too complex, but I'll throw it out there. So if I was joining a startup today and I was getting stock options, what would determine when I sold or when I exercised the stock options would be what I think are the you know, likely chances of a big extra IPO, right? So if I think this company is going nowhere, I might say, you know what, I'm not exercising these, this company is going nowhere. If I think this company is going to IPO, then that's a different scenario. I may want to exercise. So that is another layer of that. And so a lot of times when I tell entrepreneurs that, you know, you really need to understand the company that you're going into, you know, what are their chances of IPO, what are the chances of this and that, and they tend to think, well, I don't really know the market. Well, I'll say this, if you're joining a startup, it behooves you to spend, you know, 2 hours on a Saturday researching the industry. You know, here's a great example. If you are going into, you know, ride sharing, and you see there's Uber, there's Lyft, and there's Sidecar, right? You get 3 offer letters from those companies, Uber, Lyft, and Sidecar. So everyone knows Uber's flying high. Everyone knows Lyft has got $100 million from GM. And then we all know Sidecar is pivoting. And went bye-bye. So if I'm going to join one of those 3 companies, their outlook, you know, if I'm getting stock options from Sidecar, that looks a lot different than getting stock options from Uber, who I think may go public, right? So you see why, you know, it may seem like, oh, I don't really have time to go research the industry. I'm just coming in there as a, you know, whatever your role is. I'm not a key decision maker. Well, that doesn't matter. It's important for you to understand what's going on in the industry that you're in, because that's going to help you understand, okay, should I get, are these stock options worth anything? You know, should I even waste my time? So, to recap, we talked about joining the startup and what you should do and how you should advocate for yourself and make sure that you understand the timing, the taxation, and then hopefully the industry outlook to understand. Do you have stock options in Sidecar or do you have stock options in Uber? So really, really big difference. And then of course, we've touched on this a little bit in the past, but just if you're getting going, make sure that you have a cap table, make sure that you have a term sheet. Again, cap tables, term sheets, they're all over the place. I have tons of free ones. Sit down, spend some time, read those, download the cap table, put some numbers in, start playing around and seeing where how giving away 5% to somebody who creates a website for you is a really, really big mistake. And then of course, you know, don't ever say this information's not there. I don't know who to ask, because even if you go to your founder or your office manager and they tell you, oh, our law firm doesn't help with that, or oh, you know, we don't really know. You can go to, you know, Google Morgan Stanley. They're kind of all over the world. And find out if they have any free workshops for people who are getting stock options. And I guarantee you that they do, because that's what Morgan Stanley does. They cater to people who get stock options, because when they get those stock options, they have money. And when they have money, then they need someone to invest it. So even if you go to the people within your company and you ask this information and they say to you, sorry, we don't know, our law firm isn't going to help you, you can just go outside the company and go find out for yourself. But hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully you are getting everything you need within your company. So let me go ahead and answer some questions. So how much equity should I give to my first developer? That's a really, really good question. So there's different scenarios. So lots of people, because we're in a shortage, and I'll talk a little bit about that now. The numbers came out yesterday that Q3 was the peak. Q3 was the peak for VC funding. And I've been saying that, and everyone's like, no, don't say that. Don't be so doom and gloom. But it looks like, VC funding peaked in Q3 and Q4 was down. And I strongly believe we're going into a correction. I'm not going to call it a recession, but it's a downturn. And I also strongly believe that we're in a downturn. It's actually a good thing, because you can get better talent. You're already seeing tons of companies announcing layoffs, right? That's good for you. People who get laid off, they usually have severance packages. So they're not really so worried about cash flow. So to answer Amal's question, how much equity should I give to my first developer? Historically, what I'm seeing is people using like somebody to get their MVP or somebody to get their prototype. Okay, that's a certain kind of developer. Remember what I said earlier, it's all about duration. So somebody who's just coming in and they're giving your MVP or your prototype, they're adding value, but is there duration? No. You want to hold on to your equity for your CTO. So I would say, clarify a little bit that if someone's just coming in to do an MVP or a prototype, I would give them very, very little, and I would specifically prefer to pay them in cash. And that brings me to another point. Another thing I see entrepreneurs do is they get going, and let's just say in this scenario where you want to get someone to do an MVP, you say, okay, here's 1%. Or you want someone to generate sales, so you're like, well, here's 1%. That person gets disgruntled, they go away, you never think about it again. It's actually happened several times in the past. So then once the company goes to get funding, the VC does the due diligence and says, okay, where's the cap table, who owns shares? And then all of a sudden everyone remembers, oh, wait a second, Joe has that 1%. Where's that 1%? You know, they never really did the formal paperwork, and somewhere, you know, Joe gets wind of this and Joe is pissed because he wants his 1%. So that is really, really important, that to answer Amal's question, how much equity you should give away. If it's the person who's just doing the prototype or the MVP, I'd pay them in cash, sending something via credit card on PayPal or Stripe. I wouldn't give that person equity. If it is a technology company and this person is coming in as a CTO, I would split it 50-50. Really depends. And you can clarify that if you want, Amal. So to answer your question, it's how involved is that person? Are they adding value? Yes. Is there duration? Yes. If both of those are yes, they should get a larger piece. If this person is adding value for a short duration, you know, just coming in, doing a prototype, I would actually just pay them in cash or credit cards. I wouldn't have to deal with them later. You want to give equity away to people who are going to be in there for the long haul, right? And so Abdul's question is, do you think 2016 will be a tough year for investors and startups, speaking of funding amount and financials? Yeah, I think it is going to be tougher to raise capital. It's always hard to raise capital, right? It has been way too easy to raise capital, in my opinion, because what happens is that you get too comfortable. So I think in the last year, 2015, everyone was just kind of getting sloppy, right? When it's hard to raise capital, you're going to start to really buckle down. You're only going to hire where you need to hire. You're only going to spend where you need to spend. And you're going to start learning how to make money without spending so much money, right? Because when you have tons and tons of capital flowing into you, then it becomes easier for you just to, you know, hire somebody, do this. And you really kind of leapfrog and you don't get to the real customer development. So I'll give you an example. If I'm starting a company and I can't get funding, funding's really hard. We're now, you know, 2017, we're in a downturn and no one's throwing money around. So then I have to go back and say, okay, I need to generate revenue from my customer. So if I need to generate revenue from my customer, what do I need to do? I need to make something that that customer wants. And that's why I believe so many good companies start in a downturn, because that's when you get really serious, no fluff, no bullshit, and you're just building products and services that people are going to pay real cash money for. So to answer your question, it's going to get harder. I believe that we're already seeing VCs pull back, and that's actually a good thing. So I would say this, if you believe in what you're doing and you're building some real product or service that's going to help somebody solve a real problem, then you shouldn't worry too much. You shouldn't look at this like, oh, you know, I'm not going to be able to get funded now because, you know, money's drying up. No, no. Money is drying up for companies that don't have good ideas. Money is drying up for people who aren't solving real problems. Money is drying up for people who are building things like that are nice to haves, but not must to haves. If you are doing something that enterprise software is a perfect example. As the economy pulls back, you're in a large enterprise, you're in a large company, you're going to pull back your spending, right? So if you are building enterprise software for a nice to have, and you can't really explain what problem that you're solving, then you're going to be in a lot of trouble. If you are building enterprise software that is helping save money, helping save time, sadly, helping you save on labor costs because it replaces people, for example, machine learning, then you're in a good position, because basically what you're doing is you are helping the company save money. So if you're rolling into 2016 with this great product or service that is going to save people, you know, time and save people money, as someone has said in the past, you know, you want the customer's hair on fire. The customer's hair on fire is on fire, and your product or service is the water or the fire extinguisher, then you're probably going to have a good chance raising capital. So never feel like it's doom and gloom because it's so much harder to raise capital. It's actually not true. It just means that investors are going to ask harder questions. So that is going to actually force you to be better. So it's going to force you to get out of your comfort zone. It's going to force you to really ask hard questions. You know, what problem are we solving? It's going to force you to really, really listen to your customers and deliver things that they say, yes, this is what we want. They pull the money out of their pocket and they give it to you. So that's actually a good thing. So to answer his question, it will be tougher for investors to raise funds and tougher for startups to get money from funds. But that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all. And that is a perfect way to end, because our next session in February is going to be on alternatives to VC. So I think everyone is, you know, kind of worried in the past few days when we saw the news about, you know, Q3 being the peak and Q4 wasn't that good. Everyone thought, oh my gosh, everything's over. And I will tell you right now, VC is not the only place to get capital. Of course, everyone knows about crowdfunding, but there's tons and tons of other ways that you can get funding. So do not panic. The worst thing you can do right now is panic. Just stay calm and just know that, you know, if you're building something that people want and they're, especially if they're going to pay money for it, you still have a chance. So we went 25 minutes. Do you have any other questions or anyone want to chime in on anything about next session? If not, we can call it a day. I will say that on Tuesday, our boot camp, which we do every now and then, sometimes three times a year, sometimes four times a year, probably we're going to do it four times a year for 2016. Our boot camp starts on Tuesday. So if you are not in that course, it's really fun. So those of you who know, who've been with me forever, I had an ebook that we created, and we created online courses. And from those online courses, I wanted a way to get better retention and to get everyone to the finish line. So we created boot camp, which is a 30-day coach course. And I go through your financial model with you. I'll go through your investor pitch with you. And I would say like 70% of people who sign up for boot camp finish it, which makes me so happy. And those who don't finish, they usually email me and say, hey, I went to grad school, or hey, I shifted jobs. But yeah, so if you sign up for boot camp, you don't have to do it starting Tuesday. You can do it whenever you have time. And if you've been in boot camp in the past, you're in it for life. It's kind of like the mafia. So if you're a former boot camp student, you can jump in. We'll start Tuesday. I will be sending a global email out to everybody Tuesday the 12th. We will start with financial modeling and metrics, and that's the most important thing. So you got to figure out, you know, how are my tracking? How are my metrics? Even if you are an ad-based company, you want to figure out how are you tracking with your users? How are you getting those users? How much money are you spending to get those users? So week one of Bootcamp will be financial modeling and metrics. And I think we're going to roll out a brand new version of our financial model so you guys can try that out. And the things that we saw in the past where people were saying that they would get the financial model, they would take the course, and they're like, okay, I understand how to put all the numbers in here, but how do I get the numbers? You know, like, how do I know what, you know, the right CPM rates are? How do I know what the average rate per user? How do I know if I'm on track? So what I've done the past month is went out and pulled all these numbers for you. So now you can quickly plug in, okay, I'm doing e-commerce and this is what, you know, guilt looks like. That example, because I just got a fire sale. You know, you can look at all the different companies that we have. I forget all their names, but all the e-commerce companies that you can look at, because you want to find revenue assumptions and expense assumptions that are real. Entrepreneurs always say, I never know what to put in that finance slide on the thing, so I just leave it out. What you want to put in there is a forecast of what you think you can do and what you think you're going to spend, and this has to be based on real numbers. So I've done that for you. I've gone out and I've researched different companies and e-commerce and sales, and I have, you know, the generic numbers, the averages, those kinds of things. You know, the average in-app purchase is $14, right? So those are the things that I think entrepreneurs get stuck on because it's like a lot of homework and research. So I've done that for you. So if you want to jump in, Tuesday the 12th, we're going to start a new boot camp. And I think the link is somewhere. You can probably get there from the link there on the top from the free course. Yeah, and so I wanted to really stress, I've been doing this, I guess, for 3 years. I just had our 3-year anniversary. And I feel like people really just have a fear about finance, like they think it's harder than it really is. It's like, and I'll tell you this right now, finance is not hard. The level of finance that we need to know to get a seed investment or even a Series A investment is not very hard at all. I like to call it the Salient Six. If you go to my YouTube channel, you can see that Salient Six. And I think the Salient Six is even in the free course. And there's like six components that you really should understand from a financial statement to start talking to investors. This is our revenue, this is our cost of revenue, here's our research and development, here's our sales, general and administrative, we get to an operating loss, operating income, and here's our cash. Boom. That's all you need to know. I think sometimes entrepreneurs download these crazy things they see on the internet. It's like, statement of cash flows, your balance sheet. Well, you know, if you don't have any inventory, nobody cares about your balance sheet. The only item that matters on your balance sheet is your cash. At the end of the day, do you have cash in your company, yes or no? If you deal with inventory, then yes, you should check out your inventory as well. But don't be fearful or overwhelmed or intimidated by finance. Startup finance is super, super easy. I think when you Google and you see those startup models, what someone has done is they've gone from like middle market investment banking, which I used to be in, so I know how this works. They got a model from middle market investment banking and they said, okay, here's a startup financial model, which is total BS, because the level of detail you need in middle market investment banking is like 1,000 times what you need for startup finance. So don't be intimidated by startup finance. It's really just the Salient Six that I just mentioned. It's understanding how money comes in, how money comes out. Once you get going and you're doing a Series A and Series B, you can hire an outsourced CFO to do all these numbers for you. And that's when that person can do the statement of cash flows and your inventory levels and your FIFO and your LIFO and all those things that everyone hates to read about. So let's see. So we have one more question. Is one of your courses you mentioned a sample term sheet but was not available? I think I know what you're saying. There is a term sheet in the course. So if you look above my head, the current topic is this little link above. If you go to that link, then you can find the course 3 Steps to Raising Capital Fast. And I know for a fact the term sheets are in there. I know for a fact the cap table is in there. And that's the free course. So I would just go to the free course. The paid courses, it should be in there as well. So perhaps you're in one of my paid courses and you can't find it, but email me. My email address is just my name, Lili, Lily, at financeforentrepreneurs.co. So Lily at financeforentrepreneurs.co. If you're in a course and you can't find something for some reason, it could be a technical problem on the back end of the platform we use. I can get that to you, but I'm pretty sure that the term sheets and the cap tables are all in the free course, which anybody can take. There's no, you don't have to give me a credit card or anything like that. There's no payment for the free course. And I just like to put out free content. As you know, I've been advising startups for 10 years, and these are just some of the things I see people doing wrong, and it makes me cringe. And so I just want to help entrepreneurs to, you know, get it right in the beginning so you're not making these steps in year 3, year 4, and year 5. So, all right. And I don't know why your questions are ending up in different places, but I think I got all the questions. Oh no, I need to scroll down. Okay. So this person is saying he's missing a course from his dashboard. Same person. Okay. Frenchie, email me and I will find out why you're not seeing the course on your dashboard. And Jeff, thank you as well. And and if you guys have any questions, if you're watching this not live, which I know we have like 3,000 viewers last week, and like five of the people were logged in. So if you're not logged in, I don't see you. So if you're not logged in, you can't ask a question. That's perfectly fine. If you're watching this as a replay, you can ask a question via email. So go ahead and email me at lily@financeforentrepreneurs.co. It's not .com. And I'm more than happy to answer any questions, especially if you're in my class. If you're in my class and you want me to work on your financial model with you, I am more than happy to do that. That I think once you figure out your financials, it's so liberating. Like once you can explain, this is how money comes in, this is how money comes out, it really just lifts a lot of the drama. And it helps you to operate your company, because if you can see, okay, we were spending lots of money on this one segment and nothing was really happening, we did some free stuff over here and it blew up. So then we know perhaps you're really wasting money on one certain segment that you thought was going to be really take off and it didn't take off. So I can help you with that. I can help you identify where you have problems in your financial model, where you might be wasting money, or where that money is not really giving you a return on your investment. So, all right, you guys, we're going to drop off. And if you have any questions at all, feel free to email me, lily@financeforentrepreneurs.co. And I hope you guys sign up for bootcamp. It starts on Tuesday. If you don't sign up Tuesday, I think we're going to do it again. Somebody asked me if I can do it again in February, and maybe I can. I think we probably can. I just space them out a little bit, but maybe we'll have one in February. So thank you guys all for being here. I really appreciate you guys taking your time on Saturday afternoon, or for some of you if you're in Europe, Saturday night. And I look forward to seeing you back here next month.